What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wizards of Gallery Place podcast. Brendan here today, but I do not have Damo because my partner in innocence is at a work conference in Maryland. So I do not have the privilege of discussing this with him, getting more of his raw reaction. But of course, you guys see all his tweets and all that, and we still talk in our group chats and stuff. But anyway, I do have another person on here with me today, Mr. Greg Finberg. Greg, how's it going, man?
It's gone well. I couldn't be better now that Tommy Shepard's not my GM. So couldn't be better. Happy to join Brendan on this great podcast.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate you taking the time to come on, following you through out this whole season and your name getting recognized a little bit more. Definitely very cool and unique to see. We don't really see that a lot anymore, I feel like, in Wizards fans. Like, I remember when I was younger and we had a lot of people in journalism that were trying to make their way up. And I feel like we haven't really seen that recently. I think the only two that come to mind recently, like this year, is you. And then Wayne Cole got a little bit bigger this year too. Shout out to him. But I feel like you guys are the only two. If I'm missing anyone, I apologize. But those are the only two I think I've seen. But anyway, you clearly have a lot of knowledge about this team. And you host some spaces that I've really enjoyed. The one I think that's going to get the most attention is the one where you and Mr. Powers had a nice debate where you kind of essentially just agreed to disagree. But other spaces as well, I've chimed in, and you do a really great job, and I really appreciate your insight, and I definitely read some of your articles as well. I know I've tried giving you a shout-out a few times, so again, all of you that don't read Greg's work, please go read it, go back and listen to some of his spaces. He does a really great job, but man, just kind of your raw reaction from Tommy being let go, because it seemingly just kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, I was studying for my Spanish exam that I have tomorrow, and I just get the notification. I have Woj's tweets notifications on, and I see Washington. I'm like, oh no, this is probably something bad. And when I read it, I actually couldn't believe what I was reading. It came so out of left field. No one, obviously we all were hoping this would happen, but it's been so repressed as Wizards fans. You know, the thing you hope happens and you know needs to happen for this team to get better, it just never does. Especially when the only guy that can make this decision is Ted. He's the only one higher up than Tommy. And you don't trust him to do anything to help this organization succeed. But yesterday he made that step. He finally realized that all of our problems have started with the one guy who's making every decision for this basketball team. That's Tommy Shepard. His track record speaks for itself. I don't have to say anything. You know, I didn't like him as a person. I'm sure he was great as a person. You know, he had organizational issues. It's none of that. He just failed at his job. If you want to look at his draft history, he took Rui Hachimura, who then he traded for Kendrick Nunn in 3 second-round picks, so he essentially traded him for nothing. He then took Denny Avdia at 9, passing on guys like Tyrese Haliburton, and obviously hindsight's 20/20, but you still should have drafted a point guard there with John getting up in age, especially if you were going to trade him the next year. But you draft Denny, who's a career 8.5 rebound per game guy. He still hasn't developed yet. You trade the 37th pick, and you get Cassius Winston at 54. He's playing in Germany right now. After that, Corey Kispert may be his best pick, but Corey Kispert is not an all-star. Corey Kispert's a solid player. And then you go to this year. I mean, obviously, you draft Isaiah Todd. I don't even want to talk about Isaiah Todd because he's just a perennial G leaguer. He might be out of the league once his contract expires. You move on to this past draft. And before that, you know, he didn't draft well, but at least guys like Denny and Rui and Corey were producing a bit. Johnny Davis might have been the nail in the coffin. That pick was, I mean, the national backlash and embarrassment this organization received for that pick has been unreal, and rightfully so. Johnny Davis had 60 games in the G League where he couldn't get right, and then towards the end of the season, he finally gets to where, you know, he could have been if he had started the first couple of games. He averaged 5.8 points in his first year. As a guy who Tommy said was NBA ready and could be a ball handler and a point guard for this team, he couldn't even crack the rotation. And don't even get me started on Yannick Nzosa, 57th pick last year, draft and stash guy. It's horrible. And I'm so relieved that we are finally moving forward.
Yeah, not to mention Admiral Schofield too, who is still hanging around in the league. I believe he signed a very low income for NBA player extension with Orlando, but just another guy that didn't pan out here one way or another. And I think that the drafting has been the biggest issue. And it's such a, we're in such a confusing spot because I feel like these players individually are not bad. At least if we're going to talk about the first round picks, right? Like Rui, Denny, Corey. And I still think Johnny's going to get better. I'm concerned about Johnny at this point, but I don't want to like use him to analyze too much the draft picks because yeah, he did have a rough start, but he did look much better towards the end of the year. So I want to try to give him the benefit of the doubt a little bit, as Mr. Powers would say. It was there is a little bit of a human aspect there you do have to consider, and there were clearly some kinks that maybe the Wizard staff shouldn't have tried fixing, and they did. But either way, he looked a lot better to close the season. But I think that's the biggest piece here that he just couldn't hit was the drafting and getting the type of pieces that we needed around our core roster in order to be successful. And it could never just all get put together. And I think that the constant using of excuses also did him in with the injuries. And then a couple years ago, he would always use the COVID stuff, and there were some bad trades in there, and his trades weren't bad. In fact, towards the beginning, I thought that he did a decent job, but towards the end, these past couple years, it seemed like it just, everything just sort of wore off, and you never really saw progress. And that's the thing that we wanted to see, where he got the benefit of the doubt last year because Porzingis was a deadline trade, and there aren't there isn't a lot of games after the trade deadline, and then Kuzma and Beal were injured. But this year, where they were all seemingly healthy for a decent chunk of the season, now they weren't healthy together for a lot of games, but again, that goes back to, well, you knew this kind of thing with a couple of these players. Like maybe Kuzma wasn't injury prone, but you knew that Beal and KP both had injury history. So for me, you can't use that as an excuse. And I feel like he just tried to have it both ways, to where, yes, he's built a talented team, but then also if they don't perform, it's because of injuries. And I just think that after a while that wore on the fan base. And when Ted finally caught on to it, and again, I don't know exactly what did him in, but I would bet you it's because of the excuses, because quite frankly, again, and this team isn't a title contender by any means, but they shouldn't have been as bad as they were.
I mean, yeah, exactly. I don't know if there was a straw that broke the camel's back, as you said. You know, you don't know what the thing that made Ted make this move was, but it feels like it's been building for years. I mean, he's, if this is correct, 129 and 179 in his 4 years in DC, 25 wins, 34 wins, 35 wins, 35 wins. I mean, that's terrible, especially when you're following up a good portion of years where you make the playoffs, you're the second round, you're the 4 or 5 seed most years, you have a good young core, and then you come in and you seemingly fuck it all up, you tear it all down. It doesn't necessarily mean that missing the playoffs this season is the reason, but people have mentioned, you know, the Capitals always being that beacon of consistency in DC. With Alex Ovechkin, they're always making the playoffs, and now both of his teams are out of the playoffs. With Dan Snyder selling the team, all of the DC sports ownership news is shifting to Ted and how disappointing he's been the last couple of years. Maybe he's starting to realize that he can't just sit back and be like a lame duck owner and hope that whoever he's paying does the good job. He has to actually be proactive and fire the guys that aren't doing the job correctly and try to put guys in place to build this team up, because ever since 2017, we've just been spiraling out of control. So hopefully missing the playoffs and getting this top pick and firing Tommy and all of these things are finally leading to the Wizards being on the come up.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the problem here too. And I think this is what Wizards fans have been kind of saying for a while. Like we can bitch about Wes and Tommy all we want, but the biggest problem in all this is Ted. And like you said, he has to be willing to step in and voice his opinion and take over something if something is not working. But I think the problem is maybe he just doesn't have that basketball knowledge to be able to step in and fix a situation if it's not working. And at this point, it's hard to say that we can trust him to find the right person who can lead an NBA franchise, because now he's stuck with Ernie for too long. He's stuck with Tommy for probably a little bit longer than he should. And just the entire GM search process for them, I just feel like has been kind of a sham, and there hasn't really even been much consideration for anyone outside of the organization. And look, I know that Tommy deserved to go. He certainly wasn't the worst GM. I wouldn't even say he was a bottom five GM. He's probably about middle of the pack, because he does do some things to help. And although his drafting hasn't been what we needed, I don't think it was, you know, awful. And he'll land on his feet somewhere. I'm sure he'll get a job, because I'm sure he has some value to some NBA front office. But it does leave me doubt that, you know, who's to say that the next guy that Ted chooses will be as good, if not maybe even a little worse.
I mean, yeah, you gotta put some trust in Leontis. Obviously, he hasn't been best in recent years, but this may be a step in the right direction. That's all you got to bank on as a Wizards fan. Hopefully, I mean, what I took out of this is we're the only team right now that's actively searching for a GM. And all these candidates, like the Bob Myers, you know, Masai Ujiri, Tim Connolly, all these big names that might be free agents, there's one team, only one team. It's the Wizards that they can go to and be the GM and president of basketball operations. So it's not like we're competing against other teams in free agency to land the top guys. The top guy will come to DC if we offer him the money. It's there's nothing like the Tim Connolly era where we offer him a lot of money, but Minnesota gives him more or Denver gives him more. You know, it's a lot of if we want the guy, we'll get the guy. And that's something that makes me a little bit optimistic about this search. You know, we're not competing against anyone. If we want Bob Myers and Bob Myers wants to come to DC, we'll make it work.
I would add that, while we may not be competing with other teams for now, I would say that we're still competing with ourselves. And what I mean by that is we haven't exactly been the, as you know, and as everyone knows listening that's a Wizards fan, that we haven't exactly been the most stable and successful of organizations. And it's a gift and a curse, right? Because on one side, ownership is going to be loyal to you, and they're going to give you probably more than your fair share of chances in order to turn an organization around. But on the other side, we just haven't had the best publicity over the past however many years. And again, this goes back long before Tommy even took over. So, and we haven't nailed any big free agent signings. Again, I mean, our most successful stretch was probably that 2017 year, and we only made it to the second round, albeit it was a very competitive series against the Celtics. But it's just not historically a place where you find winning basketball. And I do think that's something for these GMs or potential candidates to consider, and I'm sure they will. I don't think that just because there's a job open, I don't think that necessarily means that everyone's going to want to jump on it. But I do agree with you a little bit in the sense that, like, again, it's not like there's any competition. I'm just not sure that that means that every candidate may necessarily want the job just because of our historical background in recent years.
Yeah. How attractive would you say the Wizards job is? Like, if you're a Bob Myers or Masai Ujiri and you get offered the job, like, what about it would make you want to come to DC, or what about it would make you a little skeptical?
I think right now, I think the good thing is ownership is going to be loyal to you. They'll probably pay you a decent amount of money. And it's not like you're going to have a year or two and then they're going to fire you. They're going to give you more than your fair share of opportunities to get the job right. We've stayed out of controversy in the news for a long time now. And I think that is something I will give Tommy credit for, is, you know, he's tried to fill the locker room with good individuals. And I know that we need organizations will say you need a knucklehead every now and again. You know, sometimes you need a Draymond Green, in your organization who can, you know, start verbal altercations and do some stuff on the court to help get your team fired up. But You know, large in part, I think that the publicity from like a team makeup standpoint has been good. We don't have a very dramatic team. And as we saw last year, if you were going to cause drama, well, then you were going to get traded. So I appreciate that side of it. It's not like a GM's going to have to come in and fix all these locker room problems. But the reason it is unattractive to me right now is because we have two major decisions coming up with Porzingis and Kuzma. And again, if you're a GM, you can look at it two different ways, right? Like you could say, okay, well, I'm just not going to re-sign him and I'm going to save my money. And we really wouldn't be able to be mad at the GM in that situation because he inherited that situation. It's not like he's the one who traded for them and then chose not to re-sign. So the new GM could do whatever he wants, quite frankly. But it is still a big decision, and the new GM is going to have to try to analyze everything and choose what is the best direction for this team. Is do you try to keep this core together and try to win some games, which I do think you could do. But the question the GM has to ask himself is it realistic to fit all those other pieces around these three guys? And to me, that gets a little murky. Or again, you know, he could just call a rebuild and all be well, like we've all been wanting now for years. But that's what I would say right now. It makes it unattractive is you have these two big decisions coming up with these guys. And we don't know if Ted's even going to mandate this stuff or not on the new guy. Like, yep, we're going to re-sign these guys and we're going to run it back. And it's up to you to figure out the team. Because if I was a potential candidate in that situation, I'm like, you're going to tell me what to do? Like, do you want me to take the job or do you want to do the job? So to me, that's where it kind of gets a little complicated. And I'm not sure where Ted's priorities are going to be.
Yeah, and you make a good point. Obviously, Ted's trying to be a backseat GM and you know, he wants the GM to sign his players and be in contention. But at the end of the day, like you said, if I'm a GM and I go to my interview and you're telling me that I need to do things a certain way, I'm just going to walk out the door. Like if I have a championship pedigree and I know I am capable of building a contender, and then the owner comes out and tells me, no, you have to re-sign these two players because I want to sell as many tickets as possible, I'd be like, I'm out. I don't want to do this. I can get paid similarly and have a good job other places. So hopefully that's not the case. But in terms of it being attractive, trying to play a little optimistic here, you have a lot of talent on this team, and it's not the greatest talent, but at the end of the day, you got four more years of Bradley Beal making around $50 million. You have a guy like KP who's expressed he wants to stay here, and we know he'll probably decline his $36 million player option, and he'll sign here in free agency. But he was a star last year. He was healthy for 65 games, and he played the way you want Kristaps Porzingis to play. You have a guy like Kuzma who's going to demand a lot of money and a lot more money than he probably is worth. But if you bring those big three back, maybe as a GM, I think, you know, I have a decent bit of young talent, Corey, Denny, maybe if Johnny develops. And what I think makes it most attractive is that I have all of my future picks. Obviously, there's the protection still on the first-round pick from the John trade, but after next year, if you make the playoffs, it doesn't necessarily matter. And if you don't make the playoffs and you still get your pick, it only conveys to a second-rounder after that. But, you know, it's different from taking a job like the Lakers or even Minnesota and all these things. You have the capabilities of going all in like Tim Connelly did with the Timberwolves and putting your stamp on this team. You could go that route, or you could say, I'm going to find a suitor for Brad. I'm going to let KP and Kuz walk, and I'm going to blow it all up. And that's why I think it's a little bit intriguing, because as a GM, I want to be able to do it my own way. I don't want to have the owner or the last GM dictating the way I make moves. And I feel like with the Wizards, they're at a place where you can go either way. You can go and embrace a full tank, or you can go for another win now season in their books, try to surround them with good talent from 4 to 10, build around your big three and go that route. There's a lot of ways you can go. So if you look at it from an optimistic viewpoint, I feel like it's a decently attractive job. And obviously you did a good job hitting on the pessimistic side and why you wouldn't take it. And if I'm a GM candidate, I don't know if I would take this job. I mean, we saw Tommy Shepard come in here and after 4 years, he's gone. And it's not due to lack of trying. It's due to obviously, he failed and he didn't have the greatest things to inherit. But at the same time, I being optimistic, I think if I'm a GM candidate, I might look to take this job.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely, you know, I would definitely consider. And again, like you said, and I said the same thing, you know, there's definitely multiple ways they can go about this. I think I'm more concerned at this point is Ted going to try and meddle during the interview process with what the GM is going to be mandated to do, at least for this offseason, because this offseason is huge and it's going to dictate how the organization is ran for the next 3 to 4 years or so. So that's a big chunk of time. And if the GM hasn't, isn't able to drastically improve the pieces around those three guys who have proven that they can miss a significant amount of time, well, then it's like, yeah, then it's a no-brainer to not take the job. So I'm just hoping that Ted gives he'll hear every candidate out, hear the direction that they have in mind for the team. I'm sure they'll give both cases for rebuilding and not rebuilding, and as it should be in the interview process, because you want to hear how each candidate would handle both sides. It'll be interesting nonetheless. And again, it'll be really fun because our job is going to be under a microscope, because again, no one else is hiring for a general manager right now. So it'll be interesting to see, like, the candidates that we've already heard a couple. I'm not sure how accurate I want to trust that reporter that talked about Tim Connolly and who else did he say? Oh, Trajan Langdon. Yeah. So I don't know how accurate that is, but I'm excited for the names that we're going to hear pretty soon, because I'm sure we're going to interview a ton of candidates. The other side of this here, if we want to talk a little bit more, I guess you could consider it pessimistic, but it still seems like the Wizards are going to hold firm that Wes Unseld Jr. is going to be back for a third year. And now look, that's the reporting. Who's to say that they hire the new GM, he does his evaluating, and he talks to Wes and says, okay, this is not the direction that we're going to move forward in, and then Wes gets canned. And I tweeted this out yesterday, but it was the same thing with the New York Giants this past offseason. They wanted to keep Joe Judge after Dave Gettleman got fired. And then when they were doing their interviews of candidates for GM, they said, I'm not going to keep him. If you want me to take this job, then I will not keep him, and I want to hire my own guy. So they're not to say that that can't happen, but it definitely does seem like as of right now, at least Wes Unseld Jr. will be the head coach on opening night. What was your initial reaction to that after still seeing that he was going to be back? I think when we knew Tommy was going to be back, I still wanted Wes gone. But if Wes was going to be allowed to stick out the year no matter what, it's like, well, why didn't you just keep Tommy for one more year, let him do his thing? But then at that point, if you've already given guys a bunch of big contracts, then perhaps the job is less desirable next offseason. So just a lot to consider with all this. But what did you make of Wes being back still?
Yeah, I promised everyone I wouldn't let it rain on our parade, just because, like, we were all celebrating Tommy being gone. And then we were like, oh, well, you know, Tommy's gone, Wes is next, this will be so great. And then Woj just tweets out that Wes is back. And apparently he's back in large part because Ted Leontis believes in him. He's his guy. And he thinks he can still turn this thing around. And I guess, you know, you give him a 3-year contract with an option at the end, and you say, you know, you got 3 years, I'm gonna hold firm on that, and I'll give you your third year. But like, as you mentioned, a lot of times when GMs are coming into a new team, they don't want any of the BS from the old regime and from the old GM. And Tommy hired Wes, both him and Ted. That's his guy. And he's failed the same 2 years that Tommy has failed to get Tommy fired. And you sit here and you ask yourself, if you can see as the owner that Tommy Shepard isn't doing a good job enough to where you're going to fire him, what is Wes Unseld Jr. doing better than what Tommy did that warrants him staying? Right. And it's a question that it's not an answerable question. I'm not in Ted Leontis's mind. All I can think is, he's got another year to pay him, and he's not going to pay him $4 million or whatever he has to not coach his team. He's a businessman first. So yeah, my initial reaction, it's disappointing that he's back, because there's so many coaches that I feel can do such a better job. You mentioned Sam Cassell, Lucas from the Rockets. You know, there's a lot of people that are out there. Kenny Atkinson, for one. that can change not only this team and the X's and O's, but the culture as well. And for us to stick with a guy that's gone back-to-back 35-win seasons with competent rosters is a little head-scratching, to say the least. But, you know, hopefully the new GM comes in and gives him everything he needs to be successful. And look, if he's not successful at the end of the year or even halfway through, then you definitively know he's not the guy. And if he is successful, that's great. I'm wishing the best for him. You keep him in and you pick up his option for next season. But if it were up to me, I think if I'm firing my GM, I'm firing the coach that was hand in hand in the last two unsuccessful seasons.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely agree with you. I would have done the same thing. However, you know, the problem is, if you're Ted and you want to save money, I guess maybe you say that you want to bring him back for now, just because, again, potentially if you can save money there, especially after canning your GM that you agreed to a contract extension to, then I understand the optics of, okay, yeah, he's still going to be back for another year. But maybe he knows that, okay, if we interview these candidates and, you know, the one or two that I want are going to be hell-bent on wanting to hire their own guy, well, then I'll give them the freedom to do that. So I'm hoping that that's the situation that's going on here.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, you mentioned a lot of the Giants firing Joe Judge, even though they said they bring him back. It's similar maybe to the Steve Nash situation in Brooklyn. You know, there's so many more problems in Brooklyn, obviously, off the court. But Steve Nash was talked about all offseason as someone who's underperformed as coach, especially with guys like KD, Kyrie, and Harden. And yeah. The fact that he just got swept in the playoffs, he had another down year. And for some reason, they kept him as their guy. And I don't know if it was because he was Kyrie's guy or KD's guy or the GM and just liked him. But it was pretty obvious throughout the offseason he shouldn't have been back as coach. And they stuck with him for some reason. And 10 games into the season, he's canned. He's fired and Jacques Vaughn takes over. And that's not what you want. You don't want a coach all offseason preaching these things and being in the process of drafting players and signing players to meet his schemes. And then 10 games in, you're looking at a completely different picture. That's not what you want, especially on a team that's failed to find that consistency throughout the years. You want to know that you have that guy for the future at head coach. So I'd be pretty disappointed and annoyed if we're looking at a situation 10, 20 games in where we're struggling still. And it looks like we have to fire Wes, especially when it was pretty obvious throughout all this whole summer that he should have been gone. And for us to not make that decision, if it backfires, it's going to look very bad. And the person it's going to look bad on is the owner.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Before we cut this, I'm curious, do you have any candidates in mind for GM specifically? I mean, I know I think everyone's number one is going to be either Bob Myers or Masai Ujiri, but I don't know if how much you follow other NBA front offices and if you have any other candidates in mind that you would like to at least be talked about in this process.
I mean, yeah, you mentioned obviously Bob Myers. It's been talked about even last season that DC was a spot that he would consider coming to, you know, that he would consider, but there's other guys like Masai Ujiri from Toronto. Also, a guy that's been talked about, Tim Connolly. Those are your three big guys, and they're the names that have been floating around. Tim Connolly obviously has ties to the D.C. area. A bunch of reports have linked him to D.C. Even when we were hiring Tommy Shepard, he was linked to D.C. So those are three names that I could definitely see taking over. There's some guy from Detroit, I believe, that I've seen his name a lot, the assistant GM over in Detroit. I can't think of his name. And also the assistant GM with the Pelicans. I think it's like Trenton Langford or something. I'm not entirely sure of the name, but there's big time candidates, obviously, but also candidates that are assistant GMs. When I look at who I want to hire as a GM, I want to look at guys that are learning from the best. And I would look towards OKC. I mean, they've got 17 picks for the next couple years, and they're going to be contenders for the next couple years. That's how you build it. Some guy that's learned under Sam Presti. Some guy that's learned under Bob Myers, some guy that's learned under David Griffin with the Pelicans. You want to make sure that you're getting someone that understands what it takes to build a winning culture and a winning organization what it takes to evaluate talent, to find guys in the draft. And it's more so I'm a little scared because we kept hiring from within, and we hired Tommy Shepard, who has learned from Ernie Grunfeld, maybe one of the worst GMs in NBA history. So the fact not only that we're hiring outside the organization, but we're hopefully going to land the top candidate gives me a little bit of optimism. Obviously, as I mentioned, the top three guys, and I'm sure we'll see more big time names emerge as the process goes on. But I mean, we can get the guy. So I'm not setting my sights low. I'm setting my sights on Bob Myers, Masai Ujiri, and the big time guys, because if they're available, we're the only spot that they can go.
I agree on the big time guys. I'd be interested in seeing the other list of candidates before I said that they would be my number one option. I mean, obviously Bob Myers would be, his record speaks for itself, and who knows if you want to call lightning in a bottle or luck or whatever, but matter of the fact is the man has four championships under his belt, and I had predicted he would be on his way to a fifth, and we'll see what happens tonight where we got a Warriors and Kings game three. Actually, question, we'll change this real quick and we can do some NBA playoff stuff. So what have you made so far about it, and who did you think was going to win the championship at the beginning of the year? And now that we've seen the playoffs, you know, it's not too far in, but what's kind of your vibe as of now on who you think is going to win the title?
Well, I got to say this from the start. I had a future on the Kings to make the playoffs in the preseason, so I'm going to take my victory lap right now.
There you go.
I saw this from the start. They just have such a good young core. I mean, Sabonis is 26, Fox 25. I think Malik Monk's 24. Davion Mitchell's like 22. Mm-hmm. They have so many young guys, and they're just getting started. And a lot of people took the Warriors to win. I don't blame people who took the Warriors to win. They're the Warriors. Like, no one even thought they would win last year, and they came in as the four seed and just beat everyone in their path. But the fact that the Kings are up 2-0 in two games that were really close, and in some games their offense that they relied on all season wasn't as great as it should have been. The fact that their defense has stepped up has been something to see. Obviously, my other pick in the preseason was the Bucks, and it's just awesome to see when a guy like Giannis goes down. Usually, all hell breaks loose, but Drew Holiday, Brooke Lopez, Chris Middleton just held down the fort, destroyed the Heat last night. My last take is the Hawks. The Hawks were battling with the Wizards for most of the season around that play-in tournament, and they emerged towards the end of the year, and they got the 7 seed and everything. But they're no match, and this is what we talked about all year with the Wizards. You know, you could fight for the play-in all you want, but you're just getting a worse draft pick. You're going to get swept or lose in 5 games because the Bucks and the Celtics are levels above the rest of the competition in the East. And for the Hawks to be getting dismantled the way they are, it's exactly what would have happened to the Wizards if they snuck into the 7 or 8 seed. So if you want to take an approach from a personal level, from the Wizards level, the Hawks getting dismantled makes me feel a little bit better about how bad we were down the stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. Who do you think is going to win the title as of right now, gun to your head?
Bucks. I'm going to stay with the Bucks. I think the fact that their depth played as good as it did against a full-strength Miami team, obviously no Hero, but, I mean, they didn't have Giannis. And I think Giannis should be okay, hopefully, for Game 3, Game 4. But I don't really think losing the first game at home and losing home court advantage is a big deal. They went into Chicago after losing Game 1 last year at home in the first round, absolutely destroyed them both games in Chicago, came back, destroyed them in Game 5. And then from there, you know, they matched up with a tough Celtics team, and Chris Middleton was hurt, and they still took it to 7 with a chance to win it in 6. I think that the Bucks not only having home court advantage, but also just being the most complete team in the East is why they're definitely going to get to the finals, and why I think they'll beat whoever comes out of the West.
I'm going to ignorantly double down. I still think the Warriors are going to win the title this year. So
that's fair. We'll see. That's fair.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. If they lose tonight, it's over. I mean, there's no shot there to come back after that. But, all right, man. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on or add before we cut this one?
Uh, I mean, all I'll say is it's a great day to be a Wizards fan right now. This is the best I've felt about the direction of this team probably since 2017, when we lost to Boston. But you know, finally the bad man is gone. Tommy Shepard has been fired, and we'll start the new search for a GM. But I'm just gonna live in the moment and be happy that we finally made a decision that the whole fan base wanted to make.
Absolutely. And I couldn't have said it better myself. So thank you guys for listening to another episode of the Wizards of Gallery Place podcast. Everyone follow Greg on Twitter at Greg Finberg. Subscribe to the podcast if you aren't already subscribed. I say this every episode, but there are still a lot of you listeners that listen but aren't subscribed. Stop trying to be generational haters and subscribe to the pod. Rate us 5 stars. Leave a review. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.